From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Soma.
I'm from Berkeley.
Concord, Cali.
Tenderloin District.
La Mission.
The Mission District.
Noe Valley.
I live in Silver Terrace.
Coming up, we'll find out how a cynic, Vietnamese immigrants, and the Buddha help clean up a neighborhood.
Flowers and oranges and little things left for the Buddha. Either the Buddha was producing a lot of stuff or something else was happening.
Then we'll hear what inspires volunteers who care for the dying.
When I heard that there was something like the Zen Hospice Project and they would train you to be with people who were dying, I was very intrigued, but I was also afraid.
And we get the answer to this week's audiograph mystery sound.
The fireworks and the laser show will start sharp at 8 o'clock.
Today on Cross Currents. We start today with our series, The Spiritual Edge, stories about innovation in belief, belonging, and practice.
I'm a Muslim.
I am a Jewish.
I have no religion.
I'm Christian.
Reformed Judaism.
I'm Catholic.
Muslim. Not religious.
Buddhist.
Southern Baptist.
Hindu. Atheist.
Christian.
Agnostic.
Catholic.
Living in a multicultural city can breed all sorts of surprises. On a corner in Oakland, just east of Lake Merritt, a small Buddha has helped bring neighbors together. Vietnamese immigrants care for the statue, which is housed inside a rather elaborate shrine. KALW's Judy Silber lives in that neighborhood. She brings us this story about what can happen when streets, religion, culture, and crime collide.
The Buddha sits at the corner of 11th Avenue and 19th Street. In this part of Oakland, deep potholes and trash mark the street. But then there's this perfectly manicured shrine. It's an elaborate structure decked out with flags, flowers, and wall hangings. Vietnamese immigrants chant there every day. Not all the neighbors are so pleased. The Buddhist alarm clock, they call it. But they're mostly tolerant, even appreciative. Because before the shrine, the corner was much worse.
There was a couple of years there when there was just a lot of street muggings and a lot of car break-ins.
That's my housemate, Denise Mewborn. We live half a block from the shrine. Denise has been in the neighborhood for more than a decade. At one point, crime was so bad, she thought about moving. It's better now. She and others credit the Buddha. How it happened is a lesson in history. All of these big and small events bumping into each other and getting us to where we are now. Okay, so the Buddha. By one account, the story starts back in the 1990s. Oakland installed medians to block streets and slow traffic. At 11th Avenue, that created a new problem. Dumping.
Mattresses, tables, junk. Just continual junk.
Dan Stevenson lives catty-corner to the median.
A lot of graffiti, a lot of urination and drug use kind of thing.
Back then, he called the Public Works Department a lot.
I practically became friends with whoever that was on the other end of the line. It was so regular that we had to call them.
Now, Dan isn't religious at all. He's a cynical guy. But in 2009, out of desperation, he epoxied a Buddha to a rock at the corner. His wife Lou bought it at the Ace Hardware. They thought maybe that would shift the energy.
I'd have stuck Christ up there if he'd have kept the mattresses off. I don't care who's doing it.
The dumpings slowed, but then other stuff started to appear.
Flowers and oranges and little things left for the Buddha. Either the Buddha was producing a lot of stuff or something else was happening.
What was happening? The Buddha had been adopted by Vietnamese immigrants, including this woman.
My name Vina.
Vina Vo is a tiny woman, less than 5 feet tall. She grew up in a village called Wong Nai. And as a young girl, she learned traditional Buddhist mantras from her grandmother. Here, her 28-year-old son, Cook Vo, translates.
Okay, she said that every morning she would pray. And similar to now, she would do this at home as well as walk to the temple every day with her grandma.
Then war took over the country.
The town of Vinh Linh, just inside the border of North Vietnam, was struck today by U.S. and South Vietnamese planes.
In 1975, South Vietnam surrendered to the communist North.
April 29th, President Ford orders total evacuation of Americans from South Vietnam.
Vina Vo was 17 years old.
UPI's Alan Dawson, one of a handful of American journalists left in Saigon, watched the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong troops enter the city in a victory parade.
The communists burnt down their homes, relatives were beaten and killed, the temple destroyed.
She said that her grandma suggests that she go find freedom in any way, and one of those ways were freedom of religion.
In 1982, Vina, her husband and brother got on a small boat.
I know this story. There were 34 people on that boat, and they now live all over the world.
In a Hong Kong refugee camp, in a warehouse with bunk beds and no privacy, a monk regularly came to visit. It had been 10 years since Vina recited the mantras her grandmother taught her. But in the camp, she gathered every week with about 40 people.
It was very important for her to pray because of the struggle ahead, and initially is for health and peace, but ultimately praying for freedom.
7 years passed. The family came to the United States. They hopscotched around before arriving in Oakland. And then in 2010, someone at the Vietnamese church told Vina about the 11th Avenue Buddha.
One of the community members happened to live here, and he actually attends the temple that she goes to. He mentioned to her about this because she lives nearby, like, hey, maybe you could come take care of it and take care of that space and clean up the thing and maybe provide a canopy for the Buddha.
She started doing just that. Friends and family helped. When he put out the Buddha, Dan Stevenson hadn't viewed him as a religious artifact. But Buddhism is a religion, and the Buddha was sitting on city property. A neighbor complained, "Oakland's policy is to tolerate all forms of religious expression. But after that, the city wanted the Buddha gone."
And then I started the campaign to stop that, and that got way carried away.
Dan Stevenson again. He told the neighbors. That got people riled up.
We have a listserv.
My housemate, Denise Mewborn.
The word went out really fast. People sent emails to our council member.
The entire neighborhood just rallied to the defense of the Buddha and said, no, 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 we love it there.
That created a dilemma for city leaders, like local city councilwoman Pat Kernahan.
The neighborhood was getting cleaner and more peaceful, and many people attributed the presence of the little Buddha statue as being part of that.
The city backed down. The shrine has always been beautiful, a spot of grace. But in July, the grounds and the Buddha shelter improved. According to Dan Stevenson, even his face got an upgrade.
His hair's been colored, his garments are gold and red, and I mean, he's beautiful. I would never recognize him on the street.
But it is the same Buddha, in the same spot. He is attracting a bigger crowd. During a recent celebration, about 40 Vietnamese donned gray robes on the street. Like Vina, many are refugees who fled their country in search of freedom.
My name is Tan Afanga, and I'm with the Vietnamese American Community Center of the East Bay.
She says the 11th Avenue Shrine mimics life in that part of the world.
Back in our country, in a village, we always have just like, a small shrine in every village or different corner beside the, official temple.
In Vietnam, shrines and temples are community meeting places, just as this shrine is in Oakland. Of course, there are people involved, which means disagreements about management. But mostly, it's bringing people together, and not just from the Vietnamese community. Often, I see people from all kinds of ethnic backgrounds stopping to meditate or pay respects. On National Night Out, the shrine was the obvious meeting place for the neighborhood. As for Vina, she's a familiar, friendly face on 11th Avenue, rigorous in her devotion. She believes the chants make you a better person. Caring for the Buddha is symbolic of caring for yourself or a neighborhood.
How about you? You like? I like it. Over there?
Vina asked me what I think of the shrine. Let me answer this way. There's a Buddhist concept called dependent origination. Simply put, it's the idea of cause and effect. You pick up a glass of ice water, your hand feels the cold. One can't happen without the other. Same with the 11th Avenue Shrine. Its creation required crime, a man's frustration, the Vietnam War, and the devotion of a small, determined woman, all intersecting in one space. Its impact is spreading. The shrine is inspiring my housemates and me to plant a garden in our front yard. We have a standard to live up to. In Oakland, I'm Judy Silber for Cross Currents.
For more stories on belief, belonging, and practice, go to klw.org and click on the Spiritual Edge. And if your neighborhood has undergone a transformation story, we want to hear it. Give us a call on our feedback line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and we may get your story on the air. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Religion can be a guide for how to live life, and it can be a source of strength when thinking about death. San Francisco resident Tracy Grubbs says she grew up fascinated by death. She was afraid, but also curious. That led her to volunteer at the Zen Hospice Project, a San Francisco center for the dying supported by the Buddhist community. This next piece is taken from an interview recorded by StoryCorps as part of an effort to document the experiences of volunteers, patients, and workers at Zen Hospice. Grubb spoke with her colleague, Lisa Masano.
I can remember very clearly the night that I learned that everybody dies. I think I was like 3 or 4 years old, and my parents were in my room. And, you know, I would say, well, do you mean you're going to die? And so I've always been afraid of it, and I've been always curious about it. So when I heard that there was something like the Zen Hospice Project, and they would train you to be with people who were dying, I was very intrigued. And also, I had a growing Buddhist practice at that time, and I wanted to find some way to apply it. But I was also afraid. It took me a while to apply. I remember I downloaded the application and I kind of had it for about 2 or 3 years before I sent it in. What's required for me to do it is to relax. And that means to allow the person that I'm sitting with to be themselves and for me to really show up and be myself too.
That makes me think of a recent resident, Pietro, that you got to know a little bit and spent some time with.
I spent time with him because I helped him clear out of his apartment in North Beach. We took a lot of care to collect all of these things he had in his little SRO, and then we cataloged them all. When we got back to the ward, you know, there was a certain number of suits that all had been tailored, he was pointing out the Italian suits. And when he died about a week later, you know, I was sitting in the room with his body, and the staff just came in and put everything in garbage bags and, put it in the storage room for him, for whoever was going to claim it. But there wasn't anyone. I mean, they were just things then. The other thing from Pietro, and this is not something that I witnessed, but Teresa, our shift mate, said, is that before he died, he was very restless in bed and at one point sat right up and looked at her. She was just sitting there to be with him. And he said to her to remember that it's all about love. And don't get sidetracked, he told her. Don't get sidetracked. Such great, amazing words from him that I've since shared with other residents on the floor who knew him, including Alfredo, his Italian compatriot, because Alfredo keeps saying, well, what do you think he means by, you know, love is the most important thing? And what did he mean by not get sidetracked? You know, so I love also that the spirit of Pietro is still very much in the room when I'm meeting with Alfredo, and he's very much in me, you know, as I continue to think about how to serve on the ward in the best way I can.
That was Tracy Grubbs speaking with Lisa Masano. Their conversation was recorded by San Francisco StoryCorps and was produced by KALW's Rachel Vasquez for the Spiritual Edge Project. Religious traditions can also call for celebration. And that brings us to Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's Audiograph's Julie Kane to bring you the answer to this week's mystery sound.
All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
But I do want to tell you one more time that the fireworks and the laser show will start sharp at 8 o'clock.
We asked you what that was and where you think we recorded it. KALW's Sandhya Dirks brings us the answer.
The first thing you encounter when you enter into the Alameda County Fairgrounds is music. Lots and lots of music. There are booths selling Indian clothes, salwar kameez and saris and jewelry, everything in bright colors, purples and red, and of course, saffron orange and monsoon green, the signature colors of India. There's face painting and henna painting. Kids are running around on the open grass. And there's two main stages where people dance and listen to music. This is Diwali, India's biggest festival, and there's a lot going on. I'll let my mother, Leela Wood, explain.
This is sort of the culmination of the festival season.
Diwali.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the end of all the festivals.
Yeah, it's a festival. It's like a New Year's festival. It's a festival of light and beginnings and auspiciousness.
That word, auspiciousness, it's probably a pretty fair giveaway that my mom didn't grow up here. She was born in Bombay, now Mumbai, and she's been back in India for a while now. But this month, she's visiting me. Poor mom. All she wants to do is eat burgers and watch American TV. And I've brought her here to watch a small parade of South Asians in costume, chanting and pushing around statues of gods and goddesses on elaborate platforms, round and round.
So they're basically just going around in circles?
But that's India. We go around in circles.
Diwali marks the end of the circle of the year, the finish and rebirth of a cycle of festivals celebrating gods and goddesses from Ram to Kali to Ganesha. Diwali is quite literally the festival to end all festivals. Think New Year's plus the 4th of July multiplied by Bollywood.
But I do want to tell you one more time that the fireworks and the laser show will start sharp at 8 o'clock.
That's Ramesh Japra. He's the chairman of the Fremont Hindu Temple. It's also known as the Vedic Dharma Samaj, serving one of the largest populations of South Asians in the Bay Area. Back in India, there is a divine chaos to Diwali. The fireworks aren't timed or regulated. They are just everywhere.
Having the lights all over, having the fireworks, and in every home, we used to have it, but now here in America, because of this fire hazard and everything else, it's not possible to have these fireworks in our own homes, in our own backyard.
For the last 3 years, Japra has been responsible for recreating the divine chaos of Indian Diwali on the manicured lawns of the Alameda County Fairgrounds. He says the anarchic display of lights everywhere might not be replicated, but the message of Diwali remains the same.
So this is a victory of good over evil, and this is from darkness to light, and of course from ignorance to knowledge.
And for 12-year-old Arjun Aral?
Basically what it is the triumph of good over evil. You know, let's just say you're in a presidential race and you're supporting one candidate over another candidate, and that candidate is good, the other candidate is bad in your eyes. That's the triumph of good over evil. That's essentially what Diwali is. It's kind of like an election.
In the wake of the midterm elections, that might seem like a very American interpretation of the Festival of Lights. Aral lives in Dublin, but he says his heart belongs in India.
I was in India 2 years ago for Diwali. I wasn't here, and it was the best Diwali I've ever had in my life. I got to do fireworks. There are tons of sweets. That's probably the best part of it. Snacks and sweets, stuff that you don't get the rest of the year. You know, you can take the boy out of the country, you can't take the country out of the boy.
That's why so many Bay Area Indians are here to celebrate Diwali. The fireworks got rained out this year, but there's still music, dancing, and food. Which reminds me, it's time to get my favorite food, the crisp, wafer-thin pancake known as dosa.
Can I get a masala dosa?
Yeah, sure.
My mother begrudgingly joins me to eat the Indian food. For me, it's a special treat, conjuring the sense memories of my childhood. For Mom, she'd rather be eating a burger. What is rare for both of us is being together. We only see each other once a year, so we walk the fairgrounds, watch the dancing, and I listen to her stories of the Festival of Lights back home in India. Much superior, she says. This Diwali, the brightest light, is my mother's smile. In Pleasanton, I'm Sandhya Dirks for Cross Currents.
Thanks to KALW's Raja Shah for her help with that story. Our winner this week is Henry Kernilowitz. Congratulations, Henry. We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt. And those t-shirts are cool, folks. You'll have another chance to win one next week when we play you one of our favorite audiograph sounds. It's a sound that nobody could figure out last time we played it. Ready for a sneak listen? Here we go. Ding.
Down on the yard.
Cookies on the tier, cookies.
$1 all on the line. $1 all on the line.
Strip down. Ting, 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 ting. Second tier, chow time.
5 minutes of lock up.
Ding. 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 Ding.
Think you know what that is and where we recorded it? Give us a call at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. We'll tell you the story behind the sound next Thursday on Cross Currents. To find out more, head to our website, kalw.org, click on Audiograph. Thanks for listening and thanks for playing. I'm Julie Kane.
That's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Sandhya Dirks, Rachel Dornhelm, Hannah Kingsley-Ma, Ashley Ann Krickbaum, Seth Samuel, Raja Shah, Judy Silver, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Audrey Dilling. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And you are a big part of our show. We love hearing from you. So email us at news@kalw.org
or find us on Facebook and Twitter at KELW. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio.
Saw you by the riverside and had too much that I wanna hide. So when our eyes met, I looked away.
This music is by the band Hibbity Dibbity. They're playing on Saturday at Neck of the Woods on Clement Street in San Francisco. Music starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Will you stand up and run to your papa? Cause I can hear him calling and I ain't gonna stop you. If you leave now, I'll still be wandering. Where did you go?